Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chief, you know there's two things in this world I hate to miss. Lakers game and Rich Rossi Live. You've got to be cuckoo to miss this show. You know what I mean, pal? Hey, wait till you get a load of what Rich is going to talk about today.
Very excited about today's show. We're honored to have the manager of Van Halen. Noel Monk has written a new book, Running with the Devil, and it's out now. It's just dropped, so you can get it Amazon, wherever books are sold. He has another book that has been out a while, 12 Days on the Road with the Sex Pistols in America. And he's had quite a journey all the way from Woodstock, some of the iconic Woodstock performers, some of which we've had some of the Woodstock performers on the show. And we're honored to have him today talking about his new Van Halen book, Running with the Devil. He was there as they went from an L.A. party band to the biggest rock band in the world. So what a journey. So we'll be back in about 20 seconds with Noel Monk talking about managing Van Halen. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Noel.
Hi there, Richard. How you doing?
Wonderful. We're so excited to have you on. And in part, I read your beautiful dedication to Bill Graham and in the beginning of the book, and I'd like to dedicate this show to my brother, Pete. He died March 3rd, 3 months ago. He played in a Van Halen tribute band, and they called him Eddie. He loved doing the Eddie licks. And so, as you said in your dedication, wherever you are, thanks, Bill Graham, I owe you one, wherever you are. So I feel the same sentiment towards Pete that hopefully, I wish he was alive and I could call him and say, tune into the show, but hopefully he can hopefully hear us. But I want to thank
really
you so much.
I'm really sorry to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's very tough.
Yeah, it is tough. He loved the band, absolutely loved the band. So you got started in the Woodstock. You were, speaking of Bill Graham, you started at the Fillmore and Woodstock. Pre-Van Halen, if you don't mind, could you tell us a little bit about that? Because there you were, a stage manager at Woodstock with all these legends. What was that like?
That was, to me, the heyday of rock and roll. I mean, you had two shows a night. B.B. King, The Who, and The Airplane. And you had two on Friday and two on Saturday shows. And it wasn't like one big star and a warm-up act. And I loved sitting by the edge of the stage pouring Southern Comfort for Janis Joplin. I mean, how much better can it get?
Wow.
I mean, my best friends were the Grateful Dead. Chuck Berry and I got along incredibly well. But we would do, and I was there for almost 2 years, we would do, you know, 14, 16 shows with these people. So you really got to know them. And it was quite a different era, Richard. I mean, when you had three heavyweights on the bill, they got along better. They gave each other space. It was a different time.
I not only read Running with the Devil, your earlier book with the Sex Pistols was quite a read, too. And by the way, all of you, the book is now out, Running with the Devil, Noel Monk. On his journey managing Van Halen. But before that book, 12 Days on the Road with the Sex Pistols, what a combination of elements that I was reading in that book. They booked the Sex Pistols in kind of a redneck southern type of tour, and they're such a provocative band, and they're partying their way across the country. I mean, this was a Herculean feat for you to keep these guys where they needed to be, I would imagine.
I would say that you got that right. It was quite a different tour. I mean, 12 days on the road was almost like 7 years. But, no, I mean, I got very close to Sid, and we were really good friends, and you can't save somebody, and it really hurt me. But the shows were phenomenal. Johnny was an incredible frontman. And Sid was, I wouldn't say a great bass player, but he really livened that show up.
Yeah, his end is so much has been written about it and films about it and everything, but I always felt so sad for him. He was so young, just 21, I believe.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the same thing's going to happen to my book. You're going to get people who were never there from 78 to 85, which was the Van Halen years. And you're going to get people who never saw them, never hung out with them, but researched them. Mm-hmm. How do you research someone? How do you write about them as if you know them? I mean, it's pathetic.
It really is. And your book, you were there. I mean, that's the thing with your book. I read it. My wife read it, and my son was here today starting in on it. And reading it as a family, that's the real feeling we got, is you were obviously there. This is the book, Running with the Devil. What's your reflections on how they went from that popular band? I was in an event from the Randy Rhoads family and friends did a few years back, and some of them were telling me that, you know, before Van Halen blew up, that Randy Rhoads and Eddie Van Halen, it was kind of known in the house parties in the L.A. bars that these are the two great guitarists in L.A. And what was it like to watch them go from that kind of innocent, in a sense? I mean, when they first show up for the meeting with you, you talk about them seeming like they're in high school, and then to watch them go from playing at someone's house for parties, a keg party, to filling stadiums. What do you think it was or that blew them up so big, and what was that like to just – that must have felt like a baptism by fire, I would think.
I did not know. I knew Eddie. I didn't know the other guy. And so I really can't and don't want to talk about him. He was a brilliant guitar player. Eddie respected him. There was competition there, but it's not something I can compare. It wouldn't be fair. It's like I wasn't there. I didn't know Randy. How can I talk about him? That's what I wish people would do. I can't research Randy and tell you, well, Richard, this is what he was. I didn't know him. I can tell you I saw 500 or 600 or 700 shows with Van Halen. I was at every show the first year. I knew these people. Otherwise, shut up.
Yeah.
You don't know them, don't talk about them. Because all you're doing is supposition and bullshit. And with Eddie, I'm dealing with one of the greatest guitar players ever. And, you know, there was two sides to Eddie. But as far as the shows go, I guess once someone asked me what was the best show they ever did, and I said, it doesn't work that way. You would ask, what was the worst show they ever did? And they did one bad show. And unfortunately, that was the US Festival. But I never saw them do a bad show. I don't care what they did before it, after it, during it, whatever. They never did a bad show.
Hmm. Yeah, you quoted Shakespeare in the book, The Play's the Thing, and that they were always able to pull it together and really do that show, weren't they?
Oh, they were amazing. I mean, I've worked with a lot of acts, from the Stones to the Moody Blues to the Grateful Dead, and everyone has an off night. These guys, I can't pick an off night except the US Festival. Of course, that was our most expensive show, but no, they were just spot on. And I can't think of anybody I've ever seen jump off a drum riser and go 15 feet in the air and do a split and come down perfectly. David was amazing. A really amazing front man. And you take away Eddie or Dave and you do not have Van Halen. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, I agree with you. It just wasn't the same with Sammy after that. Just was not the same.
With who?
With Sammy Hagar. I mean, yeah. Or who?
Well, then
who?
There was Van
Van Halen is David and Eddie.
Yeah, I mean, what did you had Van Sharon, you had Van this one, Van that one. And I think, you know, Hagar wants to be a part of it, so he's thought of as being a part of Van Halen. Well, that's his problem. I don't think Van Halen existed without Eddie and Dave.
The innovation of Eddie, too, is really amazing. You know, as I grew up on the top, living above a guitar store my dad ran, and teaching guitar to kids, and Eddie just had so much influence. Everyone was tapping, imitating him, and that comes through loud and clear in your book that he's, from the artistic standpoint, Edward was the genius, wasn't he?
Absolutely. He was a genius. You hit it on the head. A savant. On the other side of it, he was pretty naive and young and, you know, had his other problems, but they certainly weren't on guitar. I mean, it was fun watching him every night. And I got to watch him for hundreds of shows.
Wow.
You know, this is not like I got to watch him a couple times. You know, in 78, I was with him every show. And the rest of the shows, I was with him 90% of the time. And 10%, I was back in L.A. working. And that, I mean, the memories are really incredible and vivid. And people who try and describe it and say, I studied it, you cannot study. I watched Van Halen. How do you study? I watched Randy Rhoads. I won't do it. I didn't see him. So I will shut up about Randy. He was brilliant. Eddie said that. But I'm not a person to be talking about him. I can talk about David and Edward and Al and Michael. But these are, and I can talk about Janis Joplin and the Dead and the Who and the Airplane. But I worked with them. I did shows with them. I was on stage left, stage right. And that's where you have to be to really understand a musician.
Another thing I like about your book, and by the way, if you're just tuning in, Running with the Devil, Noel Monk talks about managing Van Halen, and the book has just come out, I think, this week, so you can get it now. You describe really well, too, the other band members kind of being, I don't know, utility players on the bass or the drums, in the sense of they were good at their roles. They were good at it putting that kind of bed of music underneath, but that Eddie was really, as you say, the savant, and they all had a chemistry in the David Eddie era that was just really something. What was the hardest thing about managing them? Was it just getting them to almost like kids, getting them to get to the right place on time and show up and behave?
No,
they
were always on time. They were always spot on. Dealing with the personalities, dealing with the drugs, dealing with the egos. I mean, David was not a piece of cake, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a very bright, intuitive guy. And I relied on him a lot. For instance, the videos. You know, I was the executive producer. I got the money. But David and Peter Angelos were the ones that did the artistic side
mm-hmm.
of those videos. But you didn't know what David would show up. You know, he would be in your office, and all of a sudden he was a wonderful guy, and he'd turn around, and his claws would come out.
Yeah.
And there was no telling by looks or feel what they would be. And as far as the backup goes, Michael had an incredible voice.
Mm.
And
great
the
harmony,
nicest
huh?
guy. Oh, he was such a nice guy. And he harmonized. He was the fun guy in the band.
Mm-hmm.
If you could dump anyone, you could dump Al, but you can't dump Al. He's Ed's brother. And he knew that. So he could be as mean or as capricious as he wanted to be, because Edward would never get rid of his brother.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest problem, of course, was, you know, Al was the older brother, and I wouldn't say he was a genius drummer. He was good. He did his job. But his brother certainly overshadowed him by far.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring up
and
how they switched instruments as kids, too. That was interesting that Eddie started on the drums and Al on the guitar. But that, what a switch that ended up being.
Yeah, but you got to understand, Eddie could play anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Al could play anything.
There yeah.
wasn't an instrument I think Eddie couldn't play. I think Al was lucky to play the drums. And lucky to be Edward's brother. And I have a feeling a lot of his alcoholism was the fact that he might have been the older brother and whatever, but he was always way in the background. He didn't come close to being an Edward Van Halen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. You said you remembered something?
I just remember that I don't remember them doing a magazine article on Al. And Ed and Dave got tons of them, and Michael got a bunch of them. Michael was a sweetheart, you know, and why he took what he took, I will never understand, Richard. You'd have to explain that to me.
Yeah. You mentioned Eddie's playing all the instruments, and you talk about how he even brought in the synthesizer, and David and some of the others were like, wait, we're known for Eddie's guitar playing. But here's a little excerpt for the listeners of Jump. So Eddie was into the synthesizers and some of the other instruments at that point and experimenting and growing, and you chronicle that very well in your book as well.
Yes, he was. But the only problem was by 84, they were just ready to break.
Mm.
And by 85, I saw another 5 or 8 years. And it fell apart. And it was a shame because I believe that Edward could have matured and even gotten more brilliant than he was. He had a ways to go. The band had a ways to go. But it didn't happen. It broke my heart, but it, the book will explain why it didn't happen.
Mm. Well, we have some questions people are sending in. If you want to send in questions, you can send them to richardrossilive@gmail.com or call the number on the screen, 347-637-2379, 347-637-2379. And, Noel, just hold on. We'll be back just a couple seconds to check some of the questions coming in they want to ask you about the band. I'll be right
back.
Take
your time.
Wow, what a gift. Eddie Van Halen, so blessed with talent. And Noel Monk, the manager, on with us right now. And thank you for sending your questions in. Jay Cruz has sent in a question. You're welcome to call, Jay, if you want to elaborate on this question at 347-637-2379. But he said he wanted to ask about the 1981 Dinosaur video. Any thoughts on that, Noel?
The dinosaur video?
Yeah, I'm not sure what...
I don't quite... I mean, it was Jump and Hot the Teacher, and I don't remember one called Dinosaur. What was the song?
Yeah, I guess... Jay, why don't you call in and clarify on that? I don't know if that's, I'm not sure what song that was, and the Cradle Will Rock, I'm not sure. Well, you've stumped us, Jay, so feel free to call in to the show and elaborate.
Or take another toke in that joint, Jay.
Okay, Jay, call us and we can figure it out. Another question coming in, any comment on the Valerie Bertinelli? You don't want to give away the whole book here for those of you listening. Running with the Devil gets into all of this. But I guess one of my takeaways from the book, Noel, we've been sold this kind of mythology that, you know, Eddie was the wild partying rock guy and she was the angelic one day at a time sweet actress. But the truth is somewhere in the middle. She was maybe not as wild as the band, but your book shows she was kind of a part of the scene and the party scene as well. But what would be your comment on a listener asking about Valerie Bertinelli and Eddie Van Halen?
I mean, she projected a sweet young thing, but her hanging out with Mackenzie Phillip, I mean, Mackenzie got all the slack and all the, you know, problems, but Valerie was, you know, she was a party girl. You know, it's like, I'm no angel. You know, being with Van Halen, you can't be.
Mm-hmm.
And for Valerie to even say, I never knew her to be a sweet, innocent thing. You know, she liked her coke. She did what she did. She was a match for Eddie. I don't know, you know, maybe one day at a time, that's what they wanted her image to be. But I think that part of why she was with Edward was to get away from that sweetheart image.
Mm.
She never made it to the silver screen, but, you know, she did some good television.
Yeah, and you talk about David always bragging that he'd be the one to marry the actress or the big movie star, but as far as I know, he never did marry. And you said that his kind of diva, larger-than-life ego, it might have been hard for him to have a long-term relationship. But I don't think, as much as he said he was going to marry a big movie star, he never did marry like Eddie did he?
You try and live with him for a week. I mean, give me a break. The longest I ever knew him to be with a woman was a beautiful girl named Kelly, and they went to the Amazon. And they came back, and I don't think they took the same plane back. I mean, you can see he married three or four times himself. It was a, you know, one of these weddings where he had a mirror and he married that guy.
Yeah, I guess there's a asset and a liability to that kind of ego or personality. You got the great showman, but then the narcissistic side.
You could say that. Yeah, and that's dead on. This guy was, you know, if there wasn't a mirror to look at, he'd have Eddie Anderson bring one in so he could pucker up those cheeks and squeeze up those lips. This guy was definitely, you know, a one-man guy. He was in love with himself. There's no question about it.
I was heartbroken reading the part where you had a deal that could have been a great blessing, a simple ad deal where you put the company's name on something, and he seemed to just sabotage the whole thing that could have been a blessing to the band. I think everyone would have got $250,000, but doing virtually nothing, and he just kind of shut it down on a whim, it seemed like, when I was reading the book.
That was David. Got him on a bad day, and he turned down $1.25 million plus, closer to $1.5 million. And when it took me 4 weeks to cut the deal in New York. And I had checked with them and got everything they wanted. I called them up. I got the deal. My wife and I were really excited. It took me weeks. And I said, David, you won't believe it. We got a deal with Spark-O-Matic. He said, who's Spark-O-Matic? I said, well, they're an up-and-coming radio, and they want to put in $1.25 million. Plus advertising and everything else. I don't want them. I want Levi's or Marlboro's. David, you never said that. Fuck you. And he hung up. Of course, I called him back, and I don't mean to say that. We're on a live show. I'm sorry. He said, and F you again. And I was shocked. I was absolutely nonplussed. I mean, we were going to go out and celebrate. And we didn't celebrate. I got drunk.
Well, that's
you know, this guy, I've never seen anyone turn down in close to $250,000 because he's in a bad mood. But this is what you say when you're dealing with David Lee Roth. And then one day he would say, oh, what a great deal you did. And he'd ask me about getting him in paternity insurance. I kind of giggled and said, I don't know about that, Dave. Well, try. So I called up Lloyd's of London, and they laughed at me. And then it became legend. Everyone's been talking about it since. It went from legend to reality. And all the writers and all the fools out there, not fools, I didn't mean to say that. All the fans who heard these things, they love to talk about it, you know, and... But now, the last thing I heard it was down to was insuring his testicles.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He had some huge balls.
Well, he certainly was a great, great showman and
a brilliant showman. I mean, he was as athletic. I've never seen a guy work out as much before a show as he did.
Yeah. Yeah, you talk about his pre-show workout.
Oh, unbelievable. And he never pulled a hamstring like a lot of football players do.
Wow.
Because he worked at his craft. and, you know, he would get his raps together. He was a brilliant showman. I don't know anyone that could equal him. You know, I compare him to Jagger. I think if Jagger was jumping as much as him, he wouldn't have ankles by now.
Yeah, I've never seen Jagger jump off the drum and up in the air like that.
I've never seen anybody. Not even Van Sharon could do that. He would do it, or Van Hagar, and take him right to the hospital. You know, this was a different show. No one did what David could do, and you can't take it away from him. He might have had an ego, but he could do a show like nobody else could do. He was brilliant.
One thing that's kind of touching, too, in your book, and by the way, all of you listening, it's just out this week, Running with the Devil by Noel Monk. You know, Amazon and anywhere else books are sold. Is there any certain place you suggest they get it, or just go on Amazon or the bookstore, Noel?
There's the Van Halen News Desk.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they have sign books.
That's right.
And you can get it from the Van Halen News Desk, and they ship very quickly. And, you know, you can get it at Amazon, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, but I would recommend the Van Halen News Desk.
Yeah, it's right at the top of the site, so go to VHND, standing for VanHalenNewsDesk.com, VHND.com. They have some excerpts from the book on there as well, and it's one of the most exciting books for those of us that love rock and roll music to come out. I was touched by the tender side of Eddie as well. You talk about him coming on your lap and like a kid with his dad. And the feeling was that Eddie had a real affection that I got the feeling walking away from it, there was a dynamic with the older brother where the older brother was not as nice, and that was a source of contention with him. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's almost
no,
like you were
that
in this.
Right.
Yeah, it was almost like you were
in a story in Genesis with Cain and Abel
with some sort of tension with the brothers, and you had to try to deal with the psychology of all this weird stuff. But there's a deep affection, I feel, between you and Eddie in the book that comes through.
I loved Eddie. He was my favorite in the band. We got along incredibly well. And, you know, his brother was straight out mean. He was a mean guy.
Mm.
And that got worse and worse as years went on. And you can see what they did to Michael,
mm-hmm.
who was a sweet, wonderful guy, had an incredible voice, and
mm-hmm.
was fun. He was always fun. I never had a problem with him. He was a great guy to work with, and they trashed him. When you read what they did to him, I think you will be amazed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really shines as a really steady, nice person through the whole story. And in the harmonies, he does those things that are just there but might not get as much spotlight with the harmonies and everything. Because you mentioned David was a great showman, maybe not the greatest singer of all time, but a great showman. But it's Michael Anthony's harmonies really help that sound vocally a lot, doesn't it?
Well, David didn't have to be a great singer. He wasn't an opera singer. I think his gravelly voice was added to the show, if anything.
Yeah.
You know, I thought his voice was... in taking with Van Halen was excellent.
Yeah, it is.
No,
it,
Michael
it is.
Had a real voice. David had a Van Halen voice, I always call it.
Mm. You cover everything, by the way. Go to the Van Halen. It's interesting that they have some of the signed books there. So those of you listening, VHND.com, you can get some of the signed books. You mentioned David... he really works it with Van Halen. And then you even cover, for those of you readers, David's solo thing and how that got kind of a little cheesy with all of that. Your book covers so much. I can't think. You've uncovered all the stones, really, for the reader. You've done a fantastic job in this book.
But well,
thank
kind
you. Of,
That's
it's kind
really
of a funny
nice
theme
of
when
you
mentioned David first playing his California girls to you. You had me laughing in that scene. How you're, I can see you because you have a. I really like the way your integrity, Noel, I think, shines through in many parts of the story. I mean, at the very beginning when they ask you to manage them, you have this, which a lot of people in business and entertainment don't have, to look outside yourself to the big picture, and you say, look, before you enroll me to do this, go talk to other managers, go talk to other people, make sure I'm the guy you want, you know. I mean, that's, you know, there's that certain integrity where you really are not just doing and saying for yourself all the time. You're looking at the big picture. I mean, that comes through to me in many of the anecdotes.
You have to look out for the artist. I mean, not that you're they're your meat and potatoes, but they're the ones that make it happen. I don't care how good you can, you know, be a manager or anything else. You don't have a band. You don't have anything. It's like Joe Layden, who was my co-author writer, is brilliant. You know, I'm a decent writer, but I'm not a great writer or even a good writer. But you put a Joe Layden in there and you go from hard cheese to butter. You know, and then Katie Steinberg, the publicist, is just a genius. And
oh,
Matt
she's
Harper.
Great. Yeah,
she's wonderful. And Matt Harper at HarperCollins, they're not the same, but a wonderful guy to work with. I had a great team at HarperCollins, and the writer was absolutely the best. You cannot
take
about
Joe Layden, Katie, everybody over there, because this is a great book, and it's a book that is a substantial book, but I have to tell you, it's a book that is a, I don't know, it's like a read that you just get into and you keep reading. I mean, it's, you know, over 300 pages, a lot of beautiful photos, but it doesn't feel like it's a long book to get through because you're right there with everything going on and it pulls you in. It really does.
That's what you need. You need to be right with the band. You know, it's the kind of thing where I don't understand how people talk about a band without having been with the band. You know, it's like this interview. You're a really good interviewer.
Oh, that's very
kind of you. Well, you bring out everything. You're very honest. You're very straightforward. And it's a pleasure working with you.
Well, it's a pleasure talking to you. It's one of those things where our time's running out, and I'm like, how did that happen? Because Einstein said time's relative. When you have an interesting guest, you know, 30 minutes goes like 3 minutes. Now we're actually been talking about 40 minutes, but it seems like 4 minutes. We do have one question sneaking in. We have a bunch of questions, but just to sneak one more in since we're running out of time. Chuck has a band, and he wants to know, out of Ohio, what would you say to musicians out there that have a band and they're thinking, looking at different managers? You're obviously a great, great manager and really looked out for the artist. What would you say to a musician in terms of guiding them to make good decisions with choosing a manager or business? Because you mentioned in your book that Van Halen was somewhat naive at the beginning and might not have always had the best deals, that the deals favored Warner Brothers or whatever. How can a band that's about the art make good decisions to choose a Noel Monk type of person?
You don't need a manager. You need a pop-out single You need a VH1, which was wall-to-wall hits. There wasn't a cut on that album that was bad. You come out with an album like that, and you then get yourself a manager, or that manager will come to you on his knees. It's more about what you do as a band material-wise. If you don't have the material, then start working at the gas station, because it's all about the material. And even picking, You Really Got Me, and they did a better job, and I love the Kinks, but they did a better job. You know, all their songs in that first album were brilliant.
The title of your book comes from one of those songs, Running with the Devil, off that first album, doesn't it?
Yes.
In an Interruption, a guitar solo, a guitar magazine rated all the greatest guitar solos of all time, and right off that first album you have Eruption, the seminal guitar solo.
You know, forget about your lawyer, forget about your accountant, don't worry about your money, forget about your manager, worry about your material. You don't have material, you're not going to go anywhere, and it's a different age.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no more record companies. Everyone gets music for nothing. It's the internet age. So, you know, you play out as much as you can. If you're in Oshkosh, Illinois, you're going to have a real problem. You're going to have to move to L.A. and try and get on the strip. You've got to play out and get noticed. But don't worry about getting someone like me. I'll try and find you when you're that good.
That's great advice, because that's how Carl approached you from the VP at, I think it was Warner Brothers, that said, look, this band is going to change your life. They're that good. And that's what did it, wasn't it? It was the quality of their work.
Well, I had never heard of them. I was doing the Sex Pistols, and when you're doing the Sex Pistols or Chunky, Novi, and Ernie or the Deaf School, you don't hear about any other band. You're dealing with them, and if you're not, you should be. Whether you're a road manager or not, you shouldn't be listening to the radio. You should be dealing with your band. You know, if you like pop music and you got a rock and roll band, well, then let them find someone who likes their music.
Well, that is fantastic advice to leave our musician listeners with. It's like King Solomon's proverb said, take care of your gifts and your gifts will make room for you and put you in the room. So, you know, focus on the craft. I mean, and Eddie Van Halen is so fantastic as a guitar player that, you know, someone like that, it's just going to draw the opportunities. Well, it's
and so will David. The two of them are Van Halen. I'm sorry, you can take away the other ones, but without those two, you do not have Van Halen. And Van Sharon or Van Hagar or Van Whoopie-Doo doesn't mean a whip. You know,
you heard it from Noel Monk, the manager. David and Eddie are Van Halen, and that's the bottom line.
And it's been fun, Richard.
It sure has
been. Interview.
I sure have, Noel. It's just flown by, and I want to thank you again for this fantastic book, and a lot of our musician listeners as well as Van Halen fan listeners. You can get some signed copies signed by Noel at the Van Halen News Desk, VHND.com.
And you can get everything else. You can get T-shirts there. You can get whatever you want at the Van Halen News Desk. It's a pretty much get whatever you need. That's Van Halen.
Yeah, they got the 1984
tour
shirt.
And they're only Van Halen. Huh?
Yeah. Well, fantastic.
And they're very, very good there. But I want to thank you for having me on. I enjoyed it. You know, I don't enjoy all the interviews, but you've been a pleasure, Richard.
Well, you have been too. I'm really honored that you would say that, and we're really honored that you came on. And God bless you and your wife. There's some great pictures of you in the book, too. It was nice to see you and your wife through the book as well, a part of the story.
Well, thank you. And I know you've had a hard time, and I really feel for you.
Oh, thank you.
And it will pass, but it will take a long time.
Yeah.
And it's just hard, Richard.
It
is. You're a good guy, and you don't deserve it, but life's difficult.
Yeah,
you
it really can be.
You got to make of it what you can. You can't just sit around. You have to go out and do it. And that's all I got to say.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you not only being a fantastic guest, but just you've helped me feel better and put things in perspective with, you know, your sensitivity to my grief. And this show is very, very meaningful to me in light of my brother loving Van Halen so much and playing in the Mean Street Van Halen tribute band and everything. And so I'm kind of honored it came my way to talk to you through Katie, and I wish you and your wife blessings. I know this book's going to be a great, great seller.
Well, that aside, I wish you the best, and I wish your fans the best. Van Halen had great fans, you know, and I love the fact that they take a little bit of information and go with it. It's fun. It's a fun
band.
Yeah,
it sure is. It sure is. Well, thanks again, Neil. God bless you. You did fantastic, I know it'll be a link that people are going to share this link with Van Halen fans in perpetuity and replay the interview as well. So thanks again, and God bless you.
And the same to you and your fans. Bye-bye
okay.
Now.
Thanks, Noel. Bye-bye. And I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to this show. What a great, great, enlightening interview with one of the ultimate stories in rock and roll, Van Halen. Here they are.